potato. And I will also, I'm also glad to introduce to you amongst us here, former leader of DA, Mr. Tony Leon, being accompanied by the mayor from Nashville in Tennessee, United States, and the wife and the daughter. They are also around with him. If they can see you, these are our guests. From our community is very honored today. We have got a very decent visitor from U.S. Thank you very much. We hope they will contribute here and give us some ideas so that we don't go wrong. Nuclear waste management is a very important thing. Okay, thank you very much. You are welcome. As our usual practice, we'll start by introducing ourselves so that we know one another before we start our business of the day. I'll start with myself and my secretary here, and then I will give my members to introduce themselves. My name is Muna Vangobo, the chairperson of the Cultural Commission of the Mystery. For those who come from the United States, Muna means mystery. It's a Zulu or Xhosa word meaning mystery or fort or castle. Myself, I prefer that I keep a name from mystery. That was a mysterious child when I was my secretary is Peter Paul Mbele, the committee secretary responsible for all the assignments of the committee in the section in Parliament. And then I'll start adding my number there to introduce themselves.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Dorcas, the ideal member of this committee.
Member of the Portfolio Committee.
Clark Trading, member of the Portfolio Committee.
Thank you.
And then I'll ask the members of the department therefore to introduce themselves.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My name is Tidiso Makubela, from the Department of Minerals and Energy. I'm Chief Director responsible for nuclear energy.
Good morning. My name is Debo Okomo, and I'm the Director responsible for nuclear energy.
My name is Scott DeVall. I'm Senior Nuclear Specialist in the Department of Minerals.
My name is Gabriel. I'm the head of ministry in the Department of Minerals and Energy. Thank you very much.
Is that the rest of the members of the department? I think my researchers should also introduce themselves.
Okay, James Mugwena, researcher for the
committee.
The rest of the members of the research department, the rest of the people here must introduce themselves so you know who you are. Let's start then.
My name is Mando Dataika.
My name is Mkulule Bontwana. I'm a parliamentary legal advisor.
Paul Small Zimbabwe from the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor.
My name is Bofi Twala from EFCOM.
My name is Noctula Mama from NUMA.
Sibusiso Somnini from the National Union of Mine Workers.
Journalist, they should be like that. We know how that man said this.
This small sign from the parliamentary monitoring group.
Thank you from Glasgow's Debonair Parliamentary Services, Indian and American Chef.
Oh, you've got colleagues? Yes.
Yep. I'm surprised.
Good for you. Right, any bag there? Wendell Rolls-Royce. Okay, I think so. Oh, there's only one member who has just come who has been introducing himself. Temba Masaba, member of the committee, representing the ANC. Thank you very much, honorable members and guests of parliament. We also have three, I think, some apologies here. I have one from our whip, Honorable Omunare. He will not be able to attend the meeting. He will not be able to attend the meeting. He's taking care of constituency matters in housing. Another apology is from Honorable Comrade. Honorable Comrade is not able to attend. He's attending the provincial conference of the ANC in the Northern Cape. Another apology is from Mr. Mjali. Mr. Mjali, I met him here and I said, his meeting is decided. I'm coming, I'm going now. But there is an apology. Let's see what he says. He is unable to attend. He is attending the Portfolio Committee on Labour. No, so he doesn't give me to me. Then there is also Honorable Mrs. Tinto. She's in the hospital. She's admitted in the hospital since yesterday. Those are the apologies that we have for today in the committee. Yeah.
An apology on behalf of Ms. Anshan Gray, who is also attending the Labour Committee.
I think I should keep the department there for to lead us on the their presentation.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. We seem to be having some, you know, technology issues with the computer. It's not seeming up to. Well, the presentation is there, but it's not seeming up. Briefing on this topic, and what we would like management of radioactive waste is a long-term task, extending at least to hundreds of years, and therefore needs to be treated with the seriousness and resolve that it requires. There are issues of continuity over successive generations, which are important. And we believe as a department that assigning this task, particularly to a state-owned entity, is the one that makes sense because of the long-term nature of this responsibility. We, however, still believe that the generator has to pay. We believe that we need a well-structured organization to undertake this task. And international best practice, of course, in nuclear energy is very important. There are issues of building and maintaining public confidence that are key in radioactive waste management. Chairperson, honorable members, we also would like to take this opportunity to indicate that although in some quarters there is a tendency to trivialize nuclear safety and regulatory matters, as a department, this is a tendency that we will not tolerate. And we believe that society as a whole should not tolerate. The nuclear issues are very important issues and require the responsibility and the resolve that is necessary in order to discharge them efficiently and as safely as possible. When it comes to radioactive waste, there are issues of cost and issues of funding that are very key. I think in the South African context, these are issues that we need to really grapple with. The agency, the bill of which we'll be presenting to the committee this morning, will have it to do a lot of research work, much more than is generally appreciated. Just to give a few examples, the site characterization studies, they extend over a number of disciplines and require very, very, very extensive studies. The design of the facility itself, the disposal facility, as you would be aware, in the world, there isn't one that is operational currently, but there are a lot of studies that are being undertaken in other countries, and these studies have extended over a number of years. The construction of such a facility, a disposal facility, the operation, the closure, which would be expected at least 100 years or more from now, of such a facility, require that we have very good management systems for such a task. We are talking of passing knowledge to successive generations in order to ensure that nothing is missed about what is disposed of. I would like to also indicate that the bill, the agency for which we are presenting a bill this morning, is not really about the nuclear build, the proposed new nuclear build. We have radioactive waste now in South Africa. This agency would be required whether or not build new nuclear power plants. we believe that it is important for us to appreciate. We have wasted Quebec, we have wasted Pelindaba. That waste needs to be disposed of in a proper manner. The bill that is presented here is as a result of our implementation of the policy on radioactive waste management that was approved in 2005. That policy directed government to develop, to establish an agency for management of radioactive waste within 5 years. We have 2 years left, and we are hoping that the committee will assist us in ensuring that Parliament passes the legislation establishing the agency. As I indicated, Chairperson Komo, who is the Director for Nuclear Safety, will be taking us to the presentation. We seem not to have resolved the technology issues, and I, for that, I do apologize.
Yeah, we're trying to get them with the assistant. They're coming.
They're coming.
Yeah.
So what did you do meanwhile? We will read from the slides because everybody has got your slide, isn't it? Your presentation slide. So just continue with from the slide until they come to resolve the problem.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you so much, Kudera, for the comprehensive introduction. I will give a background to radioactive waste management in South Africa, and then I will give what is happening internationally, and thereafter I will then talk about the agency bill itself. In South Africa, we have activities that generate radioactive waste, and these range from electricity production and production of radiopharmaceuticals, radioisotope production, and the activity in decommissioning and decontamination, and then of course the research and development activities in our country. All those activities generate radioactive waste. The current status of radioactive waste in South Africa is that we have the spent fuel that is generated at the Kruger Nuclear Power Station and at the Safari 1 reactor at NEXA. The Kruger spent fuel represents about 95% of the total spent fuel inventory in this country. The low and intermediate level waste from Kruger is being disposed of at the Falkirk National Radioactive Waste Disposal Facility. And the low and intermediate level waste that is generated by NEXA is still on the Pelindaba site. It is safely stored at the Pelindaba site. The background to the development of the radioactive waste management framework in South Africa goes back to the White Paper on Energy Policy in 1998, where the development of the radioactive waste management policy.
Thank you.
Chairperson, I'll continue to read while they sort out the confusion. As I was saying, the development of the radioactive waste management framework in this country goes back to the White Paper on Energy Policy in 1998, where the development of the radioactive waste management policy was seen to be an urgent imperative that needed to be done. And the current governance framework, the current governance and management framework that we have the Nuclear Energy Act in place, which gives the authority over the management of radioactive waste and the storage of irradiated fuel to the Minister of Minerals and Energy. That act also gives the Minister the power to make regulations, and these regulations are made in consultation with the Ministers of Environmental Affairs and Tourism and the Minister of Water Affairs and Forestry. And in 2006, South Africa acceded to the IAEA Joint Convention on the Safety of Spent Fuel and on the Safety of Radioactive Waste Management. Now, this particular international convention is a convention that aims to achieve a high level of safety in the management of spent fuel and radioactive waste. Now, what happens now is that Eskom manages its own waste, and as I said earlier, the low and intermediate level is sent to the Falco's disposal facility. And NEXA also manages its own waste, and they also manage on behalf of the state the waste that is generated by small operators. Now, the National Nuclear Regulator issues nuclear authorization, which they use to regulate the entire nuclear sector. And they implement compliance assurance programs, which aim to ensure that the conditions of the authorization are actually met by the licensee. As Mr. Makubela mentioned earlier, in 2005, Cabinet approved the Radioactive Waste Management Policy and Strategy, which aims to ensure that there is a lasting long-term solution to radioactive waste, that there will be safe management at all stages of radioactive waste management, and that adequate provisions are made for the management of radioactive waste, and that a proper institutional framework is in place for this. We have since established the National Committee on Radioactive Waste Management. The members of this committee are the DME, the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism, the Department of Water Affairs and Forestry, the Department of Health, and the National Nuclear Regulator. The next step in the implementation of the policy is the National Radioactive Waste Management Agency, which is the agency that this bill that is in front of you today aims to establish. Once that is done, then we need to establish the Radioactive Waste Management Fund, which would also be done by Bill of Parliament, and the drafting of that bill has begun. Looking at international best practice, it is international best practice in the nuclear sector to have a separate agency that manages the disposal of radioactive waste. It is considered best practice that the generators of the radioactive waste should not be entrusted with the duty of managing the waste themselves, managing the disposal thereof, and that a separate agency actually frees up the generators to concentrate on their core mandate, be it research and development or electricity generation. Now, countries that have independent agencies include France, Spain, Hungary, Canada, Japan, and Belgium. Now, the purpose of the bill, the agency bill, is to establish the National Radioactive Waste Management Agency. This is the agency that will be responsible for the management of radioactive waste disposal on a national basis on behalf of the minister. And the agency would be wholly owned by the state. It would not be a private entity. This agency will be controlled by a board of directors, And on the board, you have the representatives of the DMU, the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism, the Department of Water Affairs and Forestry, and the Department of Health, and no more than five other directors. This is what the bill currently provides for. And then it will have a chief executive officer, who will also be a member of the board, and the chief financial officer, who will also be a member of the board. The purpose of the agency is to meet the institutional obligations of the minister related to the management of radioactive waste, as provided for in the Nuclear Energy Act. The agency will design and implement disposal solutions for radioactive waste in South Africa. They will develop the radioactive waste acceptance and disposal criteria, and they will assess and inspect the acceptability of waste for disposal, and they will then issue disposal certificates to the generators of the waste. They will manage, operate, and monitor operational disposal facilities. This is now the Falpus waste disposal site. And they will manage and monitor any closed disposal facilities. In South Africa currently, we don't have any closed disposal facilities. The agency will investigate the need for any new disposal facilities, and then they will site, design, and construct the new facilities as and when required. The agency will define and conduct research and development aimed at long-term radioactive waste management. The agency will maintain a national radioactive waste database, and they will manage any ownerless radioactive waste on behalf of the state. The agency will also assist the generators of small quantities of radioactive waste in the management of their waste. And the agency will provide information on radioactive waste management to the public generally and to the public living around the disposal facility. The agency's facilities will be licensed by the National Nuclear Regulator. It's important to know that the NNR does not itself dispose any waste, but they regulate all the activities in the nuclear sector. So the agency's activities and facilities will fall under the regulation of the NNR. And the bill now currently states that the agency will be a Schedule 3 public entity in terms of the Public Finance Management Act, and it will be allowed, therefore, to accumulate surplus funds. The funds of the agency will come from money appropriated by Parliament. The monies that are transferred from the Radioactive Waste Management Fund, once that particular fund is established by an Act of Parliament, and also from monies received for services rendered to the waste generators on a cost recovery basis. And the agency will earn income or interest earned on cash balances. They can raise loans in terms of the Public Finance Management Act. And they are allowed to have donations or contributions, but these only with the approval of the minister. On the disposal certificate, the generators of the waste will have to apply to the chief executive officer of the agency for a waste disposal certificate before the agency would accept any waste from that particular generator. So the CEO would then determine the conditions that are necessary to ensure compliance with the acceptance criteria. The responsibilities of the generators of waste, therefore, are that they remain responsible for the technical, financial, and administrative management of the waste at their premises and during transportation. The generators should develop and implement site-specific waste management plans that are based on the National Radioactive Waste Management Policy. And they are required to provide all relevant information on radioactive waste destined for disposal at the agency's facilities. And the generators have to demonstrate compliance with all the conditions of the disposal certificate as provided by the CEO of the agent. Now, all assets, liabilities, licenses, obligations, and authorizations of the Falgus National Radioactive Waste Disposal Facility that is currently operated by NEXA will vest in the agency once the Act is in place. And therefore, all employees of NEXA at the Falgus Disposal Facility will become the staff members of the agency. The bill provides for the minister to make regulations that are necessary for the implementation of the Act. And on the bill development process, as I said earlier, it starts with the Nuclear Energy Act, which is the minister's responsibility for the management of radioactive waste and the storage of the irradiated fuel. And then the Radioactive Waste Management Policy and Strategy in 2005 requires that the agency be established by an Act of Parliament within 5 years from 2005. And the Minister of Environmental Affairs and Tourism was consulted on the draft bill, and well, the first presentation to this particular committee we made on the 25th of June. And really, that's the presentation from myself. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Therefore, give it to the members to make their input and see what the government is for. The bill, the application, without waste of time, our way of operating in here, you will record the members' questions and respond accordingly. Of course, Honorable Schmidt already here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a few issues. I see there's a difference in approach regarding the low and interlevel immediate waste regarding Palindawa, Kubo, and NEXA. Why is there a difference? Because it seems to me Eskom and Kuberg Way go to Falgus, but not in the case with Palindawa. Why the difference in approach? Then, on page 12, what exactly is the meaning of a closed disposal facility? It means the others are open by contradiction, by the opposite part. But what exactly is a closed disposal facility? Would that mean closed in terms of sealed, or would it mean closed in terms of the provision of radioactive waste from certain companies or individuals, whatever, is limited? Then, I'm really concerned by the statement on page 30, manage any ownerless radioactive waste. What exactly does that concept mean? Does it mean some of the mine dumps which apparently has radioactive waste, alleged to have radioactive waste in the mine dumps and in the sand? Would that include that, or does it refer to other kind of issues?
What is that referring to?
The mine dumps such as in Ranfontein.
No, I'm saying,
it's on page 13 at the bottom. Yes, it says manage any ownerless radioactive waste. Now, it's a great impression that it's lying around. Hopefully not, but what kind of ownerless radioactive waste do you get, basically? And then the last issue is, I see the funds on page 16. It says money appropriated by Parliament, money transferred from the Radioactive Waste Management Fund, once established. Where would that fund get its money? In other words, does it get its money from an allocation from Treasury, or does it get the money from service vendors, exactly. Thank you.
Right, that's those are the first questions. Honorable Kylie.
Thank you, Chair. I think you know, obviously we do need this agency. I mean, I think it is imperative. What isn't in the documentation, though, is precisely what we are, in fact, going to do with this high-level waste. I mean, I've said before that I think our radioactive waste strategy in dealing with high-level waste, I think, is more problem statement than an actual solution as to what we're going to do. So I've been interested to hear what is it that we are considering. Are we considering deep-level repositories? What is it that we're looking at? Because I think the whole world is really struggling with this issue at the moment. No one found the solution to high-level waste. So I've been interested to hear that. The other issue is then obviously, I mean, I think talking about ownerless radioactive waste, I mean, I think that the example of the Wonderfontein spray certainly comes up there. We've got massive radioactive fallout from the gold mine tailings. And, you know, who would be responsible for cleaning that up? Is this agency then responsible for dealing with that? And then I presume that those mines would have to pay for that as well in terms of that. And then just lastly, I mean, obviously you would then be looking at decommissioning, I would imagine, nuclear power stations, particularly Kubo's power station. I don't know if you've looked at any costs in terms of that, whether you've got any calculations regarding that, because I think the one nuclear power station that they've been decommissioning now in the UK, the Sellafield one, some of the figures coming out of that is about £80 billion to decommission that nuclear plant. So have any calculations been done on how much it can actually cost to decommission both Coburg and the planned nuclear power station? Because I think it is critical when we look at nuclear power to look at those costs in the future. Thank you.
We're going in the right direction, but how is it? I think we must start in the morning because we have a clear vision of how we are in the table. And that's important because we put with an experimental thing in the future. Maybe I'll say thank you for the appearance and something that they would not be able to get it to be controlled. But what we really need is that the agency really is facing this is what is happening in a more positive sense. They must be extended. But I also really hope that whatever we do, we're not going to import a waste from it and say we found the solution and now therefore we will get the waste from our country. And the situation with Cooper, they did not exist yet. What's that situation? Where do what does it stand now? How is it utilized? Is it satisfactory or not? Because we like it. And then at the last thing is that the finances, I'm not too sure, because I see it's never ending, because you haven't got a conclusion of how much funding you need. So I think this would have to talk very, very kindly to Treasury to be open to this, because it's a never ending until you find a solution. Thank you.
Chair, how about no, thanks, Chair. Chair, I've been looking at the function of the agency. One can see that on page 12, it says, to me, I can see that from page 13, the first one, not the first one, there. Second bullet on page 13, site design and construct new functions is required, which is finishing the point on 12, the last bullet which says, no, one above that one, manage, operate, and monitor operation and control that facility. Now, if I go to page 14, the first bullet where it says, assist generators of small quantities of radioactive waste in the management of their waste. Now, if the agency is going to be managing the site, would there be some management of waste on site where there are these small generators? That's the first one, Chair. The second one is the fact that currently we are aware that there are some sites and people who are currently doing the work. What will happen to some of those people and their expectations. They're going to be left with those places where they are, or they will be poached by the department, and they will be lost skills because they will still be generating radioactive waste. And that will have to be manned by and managed probably somehow before it transfers to the sites that are going to be constructed.
The last question is going to come from me. And now we'll start from what this last speaker has just, Honorable Mashab has just asked. Because we already have an experience here from the mining sector, from mining hectares 50, where they have appeared to be assisted in the challenge of skills poaching by the powerful money magnates. Now, the agent, which is what Honorable Mashab has just asked, agency, I do not see how it can operate very efficiently in the midst of the problem of skills in South Africa generally, but more specifically in the nuclear field. Where will it get those experts from, other than poaching the list that we have from the very institutions that are supposed to help us? So I think that's a very important question. That's the first. The second thing is exactly what I've just said now. We are in a very serious problem about technical skills generally. Now, creating an agency of this nature, well, when there's a vacuum of skills, it means there is no other solution except that we have to go over to the next. If we're not going to push the one that we have, the few ones, if they are very fruitful, go to the nuclear industry, myself, I happen to know most everything. Most of the scale, they have been even recruited from some overseas experts. That is how we are still surviving even today in our nuclear industry. Now, if we create this industry, I mean this agency, one, the first thing that is going to do is going to make almost like NNR, because some of the functions that they are talking about is they are functions that NNR has been doing. In the fire pool has been managed by NNR until now, of course, and many other that's not a question. The agent itself and the skill and the finances going to together with it. They are the first central challenge that I would like the presenters to tell us how are they going to sort it out. Because, you see, when during my time when I interacted with the former CNS, which was called the Council for Nuclear Safety, of which I think Dr. Deval was a member at that time, we had a serious problem of nuclear skills there. They had to recruit people. Today we've got people like Dr. Mike, who was from Russia, who had to be recruited from Germany to at least help in the design, in the nuclear design, and safety of nuclear power technology. We do have a very serious, actually, there were very, very few, there were many other experts that had been recruited from overseas because of the shortage of skills. Actually, it took a long time for information, even in South Africa, to help the Institution of Nuclear Engineering. You know, when I was in England, that it was managed by the United Kingdom Institution of Nuclear. It was an affiliate. There was no institution here, so our nuclear thing was affiliated to British. And it took a long time before we even had it, which is still at least a daughter of the United Kingdom. So if we created this agency, where are we going to get this money from? And where are we going to get the finance from, to finance overseas the people that we have to recruit otherwise? That is very, very important. That's my main question. The other question is, wouldn't we probably, wouldn't it be better so that we don't cause the problem that we are going to cause, which will make our situation very difficult? Wouldn't it be probably to have a division within the NNR, which has been tasked more up until now to do this thing, to have a division that can look at, I mean, do some, I mean, kind of functions of the agency as are being prepared, because they are very good, the intentions, but the outcomes are very detrimental. So why wouldn't, because then in such a situation, we know that if we have upgraded the NNR in such a way that it has got the power and capacity of the agency that is being prescribed, then we do not run the risk of having this problem of scale shortages, poaching the skills from the department to the agents, and so forth. We will have at least solved the problem, and we will also have addressed part of what is a problem existing nuclear waste management challenge. That's my other question. There was another speaker here who raised a very important point. I think it was Honorable Lucas, that are we not, you see, once we have a very serious risk, once we have an agency which we can't manage because of the facts that I've just said, but nevertheless, because there is in this act a provision that it can raise money as how, other than from appropriation from Parliament, then we are going to be a repository for all other countries now, because this agency will have to have money to survive, to do other things. So it's going to start, which is what is happening in West Africa, by the way. That is exactly what they are doing. They have become repositories of waste, nuclear waste from developed world, and because they pay governments to store those things, and the poor people there, they have no way to do anything. And are we not wanting to do exactly the same? Because once we say we have an agency, in fact, not very long time ago, I think it was 2004, we were visited here by, I was still a member of Science and Technology, but also Minerals and Energy. We were visited by a Russian delegation, and we had to accompany them to Uber. They said they wanted to buy our nuclear waste. And so are we not going to have that agency now trying to trade with nuclear waste and trading or also bringing nuclear waste here? It's a whole lot of things if it is regulated outside NNR. Because NNR, at least, it has got a very heavy hand of government. But an agent, or a lawyer, an entity of the department, but the agencies have a, as far as I've discussed with the DG of Minerals and Energy, that agencies are not governed by Public Service Act, so they are able to do some other things which otherwise would not be able to be done if they were part of government, such as NNR. NNR is not an agency. And so I am very worried myself about having such an agency in the midst of what I've already pointed out, outside
we will share in the response. issue of the agency itself. Currently, what you have is the NEXA generates waste through its research and development activities. And the same NEXA manages FALPEX on behalf of the state. Now, best practice, and FALPEX is a disposal facility. Best practice internationally, and in fact in nuclear safety philosophy, dictates that the generator of radioactive waste should not be the one that manages disposal. And it is our view that you therefore need to move the responsibility for disposal or for managing disposal of radioactive waste away from NEXA, which is an R&D institution, which is also being charged with establishing a nuclear fuel cycle through beneficiation of uranium. Now they need to focus on what we call front-end activities. Beneficiation of uranium, operation of Safari, making the, manufacturing isotopes, which are used in nuclear medicine. So those are the activities that we believe NEXA should be concentrating on. And then the agency has got a huge task. This is quite huge. I mean, in other countries, you do have this dedicated agency that does this. Now, the agency work cannot be done by NNR because that immediately goes against the convention that we've signed with the International Atomic Energy Agency. Because the convention is quite clear that a nuclear regulator cannot operate any nuclear installation. Its job is simply to regulate, to make sure that things are done safely. So my view, or our view as a department, is that we do need this agency. Perhaps it's the scale of the work, if we can give more detail, that will actually that's an exercise that we need to do, because then there would be an appreciation that this work needs a dedicated team of individuals to actually undertake. There is a lot of public consultation that is going to be required in this kind of activity, because you need to build that confidence. You need to respond. You need to... So the mindset also of the people that actually do this has got to be, one that is, quite different. They need to be as open and as transparent as possible. And they should not have any pressures of operation, of actually producing electricity or producing isotopes and so on. Theirs should be focused on the safe management. The issue of I'm selecting Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Member, because my colleagues will assist in the other area. I do concede that the issue of skills generally in the economy is a challenge. However, there is something that we are doing that we don't talk a lot about. One, I'm not sure if it's common knowledge that there is a nuclear engineering school at Porch campus of Northwest University. And that school produces undergrads as well as they've got a master's program. Yes, it has started, but it has also started producing graduates. Now, there are also programs at the Mafeking campus of Northwest, but that one is more on the nuclear technology, general nuclear technology skills. And it is at master's level, and it started producing, it has been producing a number of graduates. There are programs at West. We also, in partnership with the IEA, have radiation protection course that we run, not only for South Africa, but also for the rest of the African continent, English speaking. It's at West, it's a 6-month course. And, it's been running annually. There are also programs at other universities. UCT is working on one together with ESCOM, and we believe that it is a start, yes, but we believe that there is a foundation on which to build from. The other issue is that on issues of disposal and radioactive waste management, South Africa, I believe, has an advantage in the sense that we have some of the best geoscientists in the world. And really, we have something to build on, because we can't be a mining economy and not have, geoscience. So basically what you would need to then be working on is actually have them understand, the nuclear side of the business. On the issue of the ownerless waste, what we talk about there is for example, there are instances wherein a hospital can have a radioactive source, and then that hospital closes down, and you find that that there is a source there that needs to be managed. We believe that it would not be responsible for that force then to be left unattended should we find those sources. But of course, we do appreciate that the regulatory environment that we have in the country should not allow situations where we have ownerless waste. But there are legacy issues that we have to deal with, and you find that for example in Wonderfontein, the issue at Wonderfontein, you find that the current operators would say, we did not create this. This has been going on for 8 years, and therefore we'll only be responsible for a certain portion But then for that mine, its contribution, the mine that's closed, somebody has got to take ownership of that. And we believe that there must be, it's the responsibility then for legacy issues. It would be the responsibility then of the agency to then manage or to assist in managing waste in those areas. But I must deal also with the issue of wonder funding, in the sense that at wonder funding you have a mixture of issues. You have chemical toxicity from chemicals that are not radioactive, and then you also have the radioactive component. Now, our view is that that issue requires a multidisciplinary team, not only consisting of the NNR and other nuclear sector role players, but you would need the, you know, water affairs, and they are involved. You would need environmental affairs, and they are involved, but because there are issues that fall outside the, you know, the mandate basically of the nuclear regulator and the nuclear sector as such. And you may find that actually the chemical, the non-radioactive chemical component of that contamination is probably worse than the radioactive component. When a disposal facility is designed and operated, it operates for a certain number of years. At some point, it has got to be closed. And closure basically means that the activities in that facility cease. They come to an end. You stop using that facility. You close it, meaning that you don't, dispose of any additional waste in such a facility. But of course, unlike other disposal sites, there is actually a process that you would need to follow even after you've closed such a facility, because you know the toxicity, radio toxicity, would need to be monitored over a longer period. The difference in approach between Nexa and Quebec is due to the fact that it's basically historical, in the sense that that waste at Pelindaba can actually be disposed of at Falbert. However, it has never been a priority for Nexa to actually take waste to Falbert. That's one. Secondly, there's always been some questions as to whether actually the waste or Falbert is licensed to receive waste from Pelindaba. And our view is that it is licensed to do that. And you know they can start moving waste to Falbert. I guess also there was an issue of waiting for the policy. To say what is the policy going to say about Falbert. and managing that process of having an EIA to move waste from Pelindaba all the way to the Northern Cape. I think those are some of the considerations. Just the last issue I wanted to tackle is the issue of the cost. I think the decommissioning cost as well as the cost of managing waste is an area that requires very serious attention. Which is why we believe that there must be a separate fund that manages or to which the generators actually deposit. The way it works currently is that you have Eskom and other operators, they set aside funds for disposal as well as the decommissioning. And we think that there is a better way of actually doing that, by having an independent mechanism of managing such funds, so that those funds cannot be, there's assurance that those funds will be there long term. They cannot be used for other purposes and so on. But the legislation which will create such a fund is the one that together with National Treasury we will be working on. As to how much the decommissioning would cost, the estimates, yes, are in the billions for decommissioning and in the tens of billions, but I think at this stage things have actually changed over the last perhaps 3 years. But certainly, I think for a nuclear power plant, decommissioning costs are in the tens of billions. Whether it's 20 or 30 in the South African context, I think it's another matter. But I think we could come back with a best estimate on that. I just want to hand over to my colleagues, but just to indicate that I think the issue of the funding of decommissioning, the funding of waste management, the structuring of all of that is a major task, which we, in our view, we should not delay. I'd like my colleagues to help me on that.
Thank you. Was the importation of radioactive waste from other countries. And what we want to indicate is that in our radioactive waste management policy, in one of the principles, it states clearly that we will not import radioactive waste from other countries in terms of there was a question of what is the situation at Kruger and is it satisfactory? What happens at Kruger at the moment, all the low and intermediate level waste being packaged at Kruger and transported to Falbert with disposed of. The spent fuel being thought in spent fuel pools, and that is a more long-term issue. In terms of our nuclear energy policy, we consider spent fuel not as radioactive waste at this stage because it can be reprocessed. The practice that's been persisted by the French country, whereby they take out about 96% of the usable material from spent fuel, and only about 4% then becomes high-level waste. Now that high-level waste is electrified, it's melted within glass, and can then be disposed of in a safe manner. There was the question by Hollow in the Khvelem, what will we do with high-level waste? I think I've alluded to that in my previous answer. Clearly, this bill is about establishing an agency, and it doesn't really come up with the way that we manage the waste specifically. But in terms of high-level waste, as I've indicated, our nuclear energy policy favors reprocessing of our spent fuel, which in some countries are considered as high-level waste directly, and so they've made a decision to dispose of their spent fuel directly. This is our policy, and I think it would be better to reprocess it, take out the usable material, and have an additional quantity of high-level waste for disposal. There was a question by the chair regarding Russia offering to buy our waste. What we can indicate, the Russians did investigate a commercial venture in the past, whereby they can offer a service to other countries taking their spent fuel and reprocessing that spent fuel in their facilities. Obviously then, they take out the recycled material that can be reused again. And it was just a commercial possibility. I think at this stage I'm not certain what happened to that investigation and whether they continue that or not. I think those were the questions that I could address. Thank you. I think that there was an issue of the sites and people currently doing the work. What currently there is one nuclear waste disposal site in the country, that's Falters. And all those workers, without exception, will then form the nucleus of the new agency that is proposed. So we don't believe that at this stage there would ever be a situation where any of those workers would become redundant just because of the establishment of the agency. In fact, it is our view that that staff complement would need to increase considerably because of then the expanded nature of their activities. And the fact that other than operating the current site, they would now need to look for, or actually to characterize perhaps new sites or different types of waste, or even characterize faucets for suitability to actually dispose of high-level waste. I think what I need to also explain is that even when we reprocess, there is a need to have a disposal site for what would come out of the reprocessing itself, and which is what the agency would have to advise us on. I would like to submit that the issues of nuclear waste
really revolve around the political will, in my view, and also consultation. I think if there is political will, there is sufficient consultation, the issue can be resolved. I think Finland is almost there. They, I believe, will be the first one to operate a disposal, a deep geological disposal site. They had a very, well-considered program, and they stuck to it. I believe there was a resolve on their part, and the consultation took a long time. They've been at it for more than 10 years. But finally, I think they are there. I will leave it there. I will hope that we've dealt with most of the, or all the questions.
Yes, you have, and you have raised more by dealing with those. You see, you have five events. It's a wave. And of course, a wave of more questions. The more you ask, the more you.
I think I'm looking there where you talk about the international best practices. Talking about Sweden and Finland, but unfortunately it's not even listed as some of the countries that are referred to here. If you look at page 9, the last bullet, although it's talking about independent agencies, but on top, the topic talks about international best practices. I was hoping that you would refer us to these countries. Now, you're not counting them, but you speak easily of Finland from Mr. Makubela, and from your side, you speak about Sweden, but I'm not appearing here. But on the other hand, I'm looking at page 8, where you've got your NCRWM. Now, where would this, is this going to be out, this National Committee on Radioactive Waste Management, or it will be part, or it will be taken over by the agency? And if you look into the composition of this NCRWM, you've got your NNR being part thereof. But if you look at your on your agency board, you just got your NNR being the only one excluded. Now, I'm looking at NNR's involvement in the National Committee on Radioactive Waste Management and comparing that with the new board that will now be excluding party. All the rest of the role players will still be involved. And also to check as to NNR will be the regulator. Now, what would be their involvement in here? Are they still going to be regulating this agency? And who within the agency would be accounting? Will it be the chief executive officer, or it will be the board itself that will be accounting to the NNR? The other one is about the health risks associated with radioactive waste. Who is going to take responsibility thereof? I've seen in one of the pages, page 14, provide information on radioactive waste management to the public living around disposal facilities and the public in general. But who will be taking, because these people are probably exposed, they are on risk, health risk, and who will take account of that problem? Will it be the NNR, will it be the agency itself, where will it be lying? But the last one, my worry is about, you know, over the past 2 years up until now, we've got a number of agencies that are being created. I wonder why is it all the departments are creating agencies? It's worrying. We're at a time of transition. From the current leadership to the next leadership. And we're fast-tracking some of these bills, of which we may find that in another year or two they will have to come back and we'll have to redo some of the things. But I'm looking at the financial implications. Immediately where under funding, it talks about appropriation from Parliament. That means already we are going to have an extra financial expenditure, which will be coming from the ratepayer to deal with waste that is generated by people who are making money. At least I would have understood that maybe parliamentary appropriation will maybe for a year or 2 years. And once established, it will run on its own. But it doesn't say here for how long. It might be an unlimited time. But it is worrying because to me, this should be able to be self-sufficient. Thank you.
The other day when we were meeting with the department,
maybe if I could get started.
You don't refer to the chair, you. You say you, you also mentioned that you appointed me. I don't think it's protocol like that.
No, it's a program about that. This is my sister. And I think you were attracted by my face to a certain view yourself. You also think. Okay. On page 9, it says here that earlier on when Honorable Trinley was talking about the family, I think the response there was such that companies like Eskom and those that generate waste material would have to contribute to some extent. But when you go to page 9, they say, generators of radioactive waste should not be entrusted the duty of also managing the waste related forms. So I want them to, perhaps that is a bit confusing to me if from what the president, from his response and based on what Honorable President was asking, maybe he could further unpack it for me to say, if they are not entrusted with that responsibility, how do they then? But perhaps last chair, as we are dealing with this bill, I was just thinking, where do we locate the PBMR in terms of, because it was a president project, it was moved from the MEP, the department, the public enterprise. So maybe if we could get an understanding around it. Thank you.
Just for a correction, it was not moved from ME to public industry. It was moved from ME to trading industry first, to from trading industry to public enterprise. No, it's just a matter of note. So that people who know that will not say that you are talking about things you don't know. Like they say, you missed one department, it also passed down.
What's the
current
thing of that now that I'm here that Quinlan, Reedan are making progress. I have a question I'd like to ask. Are we hearing now? Are they giving us information, or are they repeating for themselves and they've done it at the later date? And of course, Quinlan and Reedan are smaller things. South Africa, we have wide open land. I don't know what system they're using. I read the other day about PBMR and overheating. And what is the situation? And what is the waste from that? From that?
Thank you. I mean, I think we should also be a little bit reserved when we say that Sweden and Finland have solved this problem. I mean, essentially, Sweden has come up with a plan which they wish to kind of bury it in the Baltic Sea and a certain kilometer down. Now, there is opposition to that, and there is concerns that radioactivity will still leak after that. So, yes, certainly they've put forward a plan, but I don't think that we can say conclusively that we've solved the problem of waste disposal. I think many countries are looking at this issue. The US has been looking at it for a number of years, and they still haven't come up with a repository yet. So I don't think we can say that the issue of nuclear waste, high-level waste disposal, has been solved. In terms of the reprocessing issue, if I can just bring that up, I mean, are you saying that South Africa is considering reprocessing our spent fuel, or are we saying that we're going to send that spent fuel to France to reprocess? If we're going to reprocess it in South Africa, the problem with that is obviously the nuclear non-proliferation concerns, because you're separating out the uranium and the plutonium. And if we're going to be doing that, I think this will kind of sound certain alarm bells. Apart from the fact that it is very expensive and also that it does require disposal of the uranium that is separated at the end anyway. So I just want to unpackage a few more of those things as well and saying if that is the route which we are intending to follow, there are certain concerns around that as well, which I think we need to look into.
Then I just like I did, I'll just give a small correction so that the good contribution may not be misconstrued. When you talk about non-proliferation, it's not a separation of uranium and plutonium, actually it's upgrading uranium into plutonium. according to first, responded to what the chief director referred to. He has referred to many institutions that are offering nuclear engineering. He referred to that the VET does this, UCT does that, Potchefstroom does that. So there are a number of nuclear students that are being that are in the pipeline to manage or to solve the skills challenge, because we are addressing that. I don't think that is true, because you see, there is many people, and I know that in PBMR, that's what I do not know what why that mistake is done and response to. It's because of the way nuclear engineering has been secretive. But of course, it has been an international undertaking that nuclear engineering must not be exposed or the carried as I said before. Before developing what was called third world countries, they used to say that proliferation of nuclear technology is to that were in that world head. And I remember at a certain conference where they said that all along up until the new dawn of democracies in autocratic regimes, like Soviet Union and apartheid South Africa, we are now faced with the biggest challenge of nuclear technology management. All along until now, these autocratic regimes, one of the first things they did was to properly manage a nuclear weapons program of nuclear technology. Now, with the new democratic regime in Russia and South Africa, the ANC, we are very doubtful. In one conference, this is what Trump said. So, in other words, what I'm saying therefore is that they have kept secret. Many people do not know the difference between nuclear physics and nuclear engineering. Nuclear reactor physics. Nuclear engineering actually is reflected as nuclear reactor physics in terms of physics, because that's where you deal with nuclear, with the reactor physics of nuclear reactor. So that's where many people, in PBMR, I remember they mentioned that they had met in nuclear reactor physics. Well, actually, they didn't even have one. They only had all people who started studying solid state physics or other things, and they called them reactor physics. So I think that type of equation must now be established, that nuclear physics and nuclear reactor physics, although they are related, they are not the same, and therefore they cannot be used in similarity in addressing what are called nuclear engineering power problems, nuclear power engineering problems. So, I know University of Cape Town used to have what they call electromechanical engineering preparation, which they wanted to introduce nuclear engineering when Quebec was there, but they ended up abandoning even that program themselves. And what is that? What they have at the University of Potchefstroom is radiation physics. Not exactly nuclear engineering. It's radiation physics. And what they have in all these other the institutions that are talking about is radiation physics, which is totally different from nuclear engineering. No, not totally different, but different. Not totally different. So, actually, in the UK itself, there are only four institutions that offer nuclear engineering at an undergraduate level. And I've been told in the US there are about 12, I don't know. I'm talking about nuclear engineering, not radiation physics or nuclear physics. Because all of our students, universities there, they do offer nuclear physics in their physics department. But nuclear engineering is offered under nuclear engineering department, mostly except, as I know, in the University of California, Los Angeles, where it was offered under the Department of Aerospace and Nuclear Engineering. So I think we must take note of those things and separate things. when we deal with this question. But I've got some questions here which I have. You said that Narasa is a generator of waste and therefore it cannot be given it cannot also be managed, be given money to manage nuclear waste. Accept that, I think you're correct. But Eden asked, I read you once and there were some of these questions. I do have a big book here which guides me when I talk. I'll just read a small sentence from this book, which is about regulatory activities. It says the NRC, that is Nuclear Regulatory Commission of the United States, has a legal responsibility to provide a reasonable assurance of adequate protection of public health. The QRAs have demonstrated that most of the deterministic based existing regulations do not efficiently address the dominant contributions to public health risk. Some of them do not address the dominant contribution at all. The regulations must be changed such that the regulations and both the regulator and the licensee, the regulations must be changed such that the regulations and both the regulator and the licensee to manage public health risk in an effective and efficient manner. The NRC is slowly moving toward regulations that address public health risk using the insights gained from the licensee QRA. This is evident in the recent changes to the rules governing the monitoring of maintenance and the implementation of reactor oversight process. But the pace of change to risk informed the regulation has been slow. So the regulatory authorities can be tasked to manage also the nuclear waste. That is why they say that these regulatory. And in fact, that is how I have always understood it myself. But over and above that, I can also show you here what they talk about the waste management here. They are talking about how to manage these different waste shallow level burial, monitor concrete canister, background load, and so forth and so forth. So, what the agency are talking about will be doing is exactly a detailed work which the regulatory commission or the regulatory can also do. And in particular, in our case, where we have no skills, I think the best practice would be to expand the NLR activities such that they include a division or whatever you call it, which is going to do exactly what the agency is, so that it does not actually handicap the shortage that we already have in this particular area. I'm worried if we're going to create a separate agency, because although it is an entity, I know many entities of the department that have failed. In fact, we visited one for science and technology, which certainly has failed, because, you know, while it is not under the direct hand, while it is not the part of the department's focus, while it has been given to some individuals running, it has a tendency to collapse, especially when there are challenges of finances, and that's when it will end up resorting to importing different types of institutions to fund it, and in that case, then management of that particular entity then becomes very, very important. And that is why the idea of an agency, the idea of I'm very worried about calling an agent
when you ask, they are actually duplicating what exactly is already existing. You say, but that what you're saying is already done by them. What are you going to do about it? And they don't know. So others come who are not very well prepared to convince them. And so when you ask them, they wonder, they are unable to tell you why they are creating agents, and then they withdraw them. So you can see that they have not decided that they only wanted to form an agent. That is why you hear them about talking to him. So that has therefore labeled easily some agents that may be having really useful future focus to address the problem. I think we have to workshop some of these things, because what I've already said, it's a very serious problem. You know, the mental health service, they told us about a very serious problem about the skills shortage, how they are facing, how is the bill that we're trying to amend will not work out unless we come with a mechanism to solve it. And I think it is exactly the same as the future of the problem, because we will have a serious problem of financing, serious problem of skills. As I'm saying, that we don't have the skills in the... We went to Quebec one time. They said in Quebec they know of only three people that are being trained in nuclear engineering overseas. They made a mistake. They said there were three that were trained by ESCOM, and they said one has finished and he's back. And that time it was only myself who had finished, so they thought I was trained by ESCOM. So I asked the network manager, who was this one that was there, because I knew him. I can't remember it, but I know that it's coming saying to one who is already back. So I said, no, I don't think that. I know three of them that have only gone now. But they did not go to train. One of them is going to train turbines, not nuclear engineering. So we must clarify some of these questions as you come here, because you know, they tend to cause confusion. Now, the other question here which you talked about was the geology, South Africa being the best, having the best mining industry and a very old mining history, is supposed to have the best geologist. It's true. That statement is true. But it's not really. Because actually in South Africa, is running short of skills, including geologists. And in fact, according to the mine record, according to the record that was being given by the recent brief from the Mine Health and Safety, is that South Africa, they showed us that it is the worst in the management of mine safety. And with good geology, we wouldn't be very well in the West. In fact, one of the questions you raised is that, why is it when we have such an old experience in the mining technology here in South Africa since we started in the 18th, we've got companies that have just started mining, but did they show their records? In fact, yeah, I think, what was New Zealand? Was it Canada or New Zealand? I can't remember. That they showed a very low rate of mining safety risks. And so we ask why. It means that it's probably, it may be political, legacy of apartheid, the workers in the mine are not being looked at. They don't have credit because, of course, the lack of money, of apartheid money, was based on the migration, and it was migrant labor, and so standards, they still feel like they don't need to have credit like the world, and so forth and so forth. These are some of the things that we have to talk about in a workshop. We have to workshop this agency and come up, of course, claiming honorable claiming here. Who is researching on this. I think he can come probably with some of the best practices, how the agency can be converted into something working than is being proposed. Because it is a challenge. We need to address it. But probably not the way you have come up with it. We need a workshop probably to think about it. of theology is still watching, is still a problem, because we don't have enough. In fact, when we went to the Council for Geoscience, I think it was 2006, we were told that they are running short of geologists, and because when we asked them why, the management told us that because, you see, black people don't want to become geologists, they say geology is too difficult. Now we don't have only as a problem. I think I did discuss with you that thing when you met in one of the meetings that we were surprised to be told that geologists, black students don't want to do geology because it's difficult for them. That's what they told us. Now, in terms of one member raised the question of NC of this NCRWM. In fact, I think that the NCRWM is the best tool we can use as far as I'm concerned to upgrade the activity. As you mentioned, it has got even NNR within it. And so I think it can really play a very important role to really achieve the kind of frustrations that we want to solve. But this also needs a workshop to discuss and see what it does and how it can be upgraded to have this. Because the question, I think, the empowerment of such an agency is going to create a lot of problems for many reasons, other than that, what you remember, but still, finances is going to cause an and then there is a problem which the last very important one which we have members of just hinted on. It has come to our understanding that the creation of this agency, you see, it is when people discuss and analyze, then these things arise. It creates two problems. It creates two important problems for the future. One, when, like one member was saying, that we are creating agencies which sometimes next year or two we have to amend or to, either to disband them or to change their role and incorporate them to some other institutions because they have not done what they were supposed to do. And there is a problem. Some people have analyzed what would happen. You know, the economy. And lawyers, they say that. But the consequences are very grave because remember that once these agencies have been established and CEOs and boards have been appointed, and if you come to then dissolve them and incorporate them into other institutions, you have a consequence of paying the 5-year full pay of those people that are in those agencies. And that is going to be a nightmare again for the government, for the new government, effectively. And so these are all the consequences. Have to sit down and think about when we create this agency and have a workshop and know that we're creating something that are not going to be nightmares of our future. I think that is that's how far I'm going to go.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Of course, we don't come here claiming to have all the answers. And I just want to start by saying, again, this is not a trivial matter. I have said to the nuclear industry players that there are two ways we can do nuclear. Only two. You do it well, or you don't do it. There's no middle ground. Again, here, I think it's a question of choice. Do we do this following international best practice? Or do we do it our way? Which does not follow international best practice. I think that choice that, you know, has got to be made. The policy that called for this agency to be formed was approved in 2005. And the development of this legislation has been in the department's plan since then. So it's not a question of, we, you know, this agency has just been decided. It is called for in policy, and what we are doing is actually implementing government policy. If there is a change, then I think from as officials, we have to be advised otherwise. On Sweden and Finland, we know Sweden is one of those countries that is a leader, and they do have an agency, and that agency is called SKB. And we interact with them regularly. We even have meetings with them here in the country as a department. And I do believe that also ESCOM has some interactions with SKB. Finland, I actually visited the agency in Finland myself. That is responsible. It is an agency that is responsible for managing waste. So the international best practice does include, it's just that as the presentation was being made, certain countries were chosen and others were excluded. But not because of anything, it was just the choice of the person who was doing the presentation. But definitely those two countries do have agents. On the issue of the National Committee versus the, and why exclude NNR, the National Committee is a committee of government officials. It's a committee of, it's an oversight committee. It includes NNR, that committee, but they are there to guide, they are there to also advise on safety related matters. But they cannot be operators of a disposal facility, because then who would regulate them? That would be the question. Therefore, they have to be outside, so that they can then say, no, here you are wrong, and so on. That is our view, and it is actually informed by an international convention that we are party to, and that this parliament actually gave authority for government to accede. And it is clear that that convention is quite clear. And if I can just quote, it says each contracting party, and in this case South Africa, in accordance with this legislative and regulatory framework, shall take the appropriate steps to ensure the effective independence of regulatory function from functions where organizations are involved in both spent fuel and radioactive waste management and in their regulation. So the Joint Convention is quite clear that the regulator cannot manage radioactive waste and, you know, should not be involved in those activities. There is basically to be a regulatory authority. I think the issue of the skills, I think a number of our young people have gone to Penn State University and they have graduated from Penn State University in nuclear engineering, not nuclear physics. Dr. Nomsa Mkhosi, Dr. Mphahlele, Dr. Jobeka are all nuclear engineering graduates at PhD level, recent graduates. Dr. Jobeka and Dr. Mkhosi graduated last year. Dr. Mphahlele graduated 2 weeks ago. There is, if I can mention others, Mr. Kuluban, at master's level, nuclear engineer. Mr. Mkabela is pursuing his PhD already, graduated from master's level, nuclear engineering. And I do, Jefferson, want to also indicate that Porsche campus has a nuclear engineering school. And perhaps others, yes, are doing nuclear physics. But Porsche has got a nuclear engineering school. And in fact, they have lecturers from the World Nuclear University who come during summer to run a summer school as part of the program for the nuclear engineering. But perhaps they can best explain the program. On the issue of the PBMR, I would really like to request that the questions on PBMR. If we could be allowed to leave to the Department of Public Enterprise. Because
but PBMR you are entering a minefield now when you say so, because PBMR is you know, we as the portfolio committee, we control, we oversee energy points, and nuclear energy is part of the mandate of the Department of Minerals and Energy. And so CDMR, even if you ask them in public enterprise, they will tell you that they are responsible for PBMR operations rather than policy. Policy still falls within us. So it's simply no conflict of interest when we discuss PBMR. Members are very well mandated to ask questions relating to PBMR in terms of policy. Because here we are doing policy. The act that you are talking about is on nuclear radioactive waste management, which, whether you like it or not, squarely falls before PBMR premises. So I think, therefore, we must not put an argument to which then members will tell you this and you tell them because the opposite, that no, people are not public enterprise, it does belong in, as we are discussing the energy, I mean the waste management policy issues. Okay.
Thanks, Chairperson. Perhaps I was not clear in terms of my response. The question was, there was an article about a fire related to PBMR. Now, one such issue, first of all, PBMR is not operating. There is no PBMR that is operating in South Africa. They have submitted applications to the National Nuclear Regulator, and it is our view that issues of fire are safety-related issues, and the NNR would be best placed to really respond on a fire issue. But when it comes to radioactive waste from PBMR, they would have to comply, yes, with the Nuclear Energy Act. And in as far as disposing of their waste, they will be governed also by this legislation.
No, but I think I should protect my member. You see, if anybody says in Quebec has caught fire and you are the chief director of nuclear, and then you are saying that it shouldn't be asked in a platform like that where you are presenting something about the safety of plants, nuclear plants like Quebec or Pigma or whatever, next, and they say, no, it doesn't belong here, it belongs to NNR, or it doesn't belong, it belongs to public enterprise. I think the question is that these are the questions that really members, as overseers, as overseers of policy, energy policy, when they meet with either officials of the department or you as a person of the department dealing with nuclear, they have to ask. And you have to tell them that I still have to consult with this particular division and find out what exactly has happened if you do not know. But you are the chief director of nuclear. So I think members have an obligation to find out and use the advantage that you are here.
Chairperson, I then request that we come back to the committee with the on that one. We'll come back in writing on that. I again, Chairperson, I'd like my colleagues to assist on the matters that I've left out.
There was a question whether the agency is phasing out the National Commission on the Nuclear. The agency will not be phasing out the committee because, as Mr. Matukala mentioned, the committee is an oversight committee of government. And the way the policy actually read said that the government would establish a National Commission on Radioactive Waste Management, which will oversee the implementation of the policy. Now, that is the Radioactive Waste Management Policy and Strategy, and we shall be independent from the generators of radioactive waste. So what happens with the committee is that you see that you don't have representatives of the generators like Eskom or NEXA, but it allows us to have the regulator sit on the committee so that the regulator can then advise the government officials that are there, because it is, I mean, the NNR is there to protect people, property and the environment. And you could say that the committee also shares that particular view that you need to protect the people, the property and the environment. So you would have the NNR sit in the committee so that they can properly advise the committee members on issues that then directly relate to the protection of people, property and the environment. And therefore, the agency that is coming, the agency will be operating radioactive waste facilities. So they will not be doing any regulatory activities. They are activities of the National Nuclear Regulator. So the agency will operate facilities, and they will have to bring, you would have, the committee makes recommendations to the Minister of Minerals and Energy. And some of the recommendations that they make would be on the management directives that the minister can issue
So the responsibilities of the committee and the agency are very clear and totally separate. On who the public information, there was a question on public information, whose responsibility is it? Is it the agency's or is it the NNI? We have the public safety the regulations on public safety information for us. They exist even today, where the operators of nuclear facilities are required to actually have the forum in place. This is a forum that is then used to communicate with the public that lives around the nuclear facilities, where if there are matters that need to be explained to the public, and the public can actually raise questions in those meetings in as far as they relate to the safety of the public. And therefore, that particular regulation would apply to any facility that would be operated by this particular agency. And therefore, the agency would also be required to have such forums for all the facilities that they have. And they then communicate with the public. But that does not stop the national nuclear regulator from also talking to the members of the public about the NNR. Also has a program independent of the operators of nuclear facilities where they actually engage members of the public. Thanks. I'll leave the other questions to you.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to say a few words on the issue of the National Nuclear Regulator being a possible operator of the agency. As the law stands now, we've got the NNR Act, and it provides for the establishment of a national nuclear regulator, which is a safety regulator. And its mandate is to issue nuclear authorities to the nuclear industry and lay down safety standards. So they allow them in terms of authority to operate, and they require them to operate against certain safety standards. That is the mandate of the NNR. The NNR has got no mandate to operate any nuclear facility. So, and also, if one consider that, well, not in terms of the international agreements that we've signed, conventions, it's also not permitted. The regulator, safety regulator, must be totally independent of any operational activities. I think that is the way that the world is operating in terms of the nuclear industry. With regard to reprocessing, I think what we need to note here is the nuclear energy policy approved by Cabinet, and that we're just waiting for the Minister to officially announce. It has a position on reprocessing whereby in the short term South Africa shall make use of existing commercial reprocessing facilities in other countries. However, in the longer term, NEXOS shall investigate the viability of building an indigenous reprocessing facility. That is the position that the policy has taken on reprocessing. With regard to health risks, I think there was a question about responsibilities. I think, again, there, we've established the NNR Act. That is our nuclear safety regulator. It lays down the safety standards, and all operators of nuclear facilities must comply with those safety standards, and they must obviously comply with all the conditions in the nuclear installation license or the nuclear authority that has been issued to them by the regulator. So in terms of responsibility with safety, everybody is always responsible. The operator is responsible for safety, to comply with the safety standards, and the regulator is also responsible to lay down appropriate safety standards and to do inspection, compliance inspection against those safety standards. I think those are the questions that I could handle. Thank you.
There will be again as I said, the more you input, the more you get the output. Whatever you put in the output, and here are the inputs. And I've got for the hand, but before I give the hand, because some of my forms are later on what we've just said, can you allow me follow you up? You have just said the NEXA is considering for now it's based on commercial news at just tell me if I have misunderstood. But I thought you'd say that for now, NESCA depends on commercial aspects in reprocessing facilities. But it is considering establishing local processing facilities. That's what I said.
What I'm saying is that there's a nuclear energy policy that's been approved by Cabinet. The Minister is probably going to make official soon, but it's not official yet. And that nuclear policy basically says that in the short term, South Africa shall use reprocessing facilities, commercial reprocessing facilities overseas. Spring's got one, there's one in the UK. So if we want to reprocess our spent fuel at this stage, we can have a contract, a commercial contract, with countries overseas to do that for us. And then we can use the recyclable material in MOX fuel, mixed oxide fuel, that we can reload in the reactor again. So it's recycling usable material. The policy says in the longer term, Nexos shall investigate the viability of having an indigenous reprocessing facility built in South Africa. It's just an investigation that they will do in the longer term.
That is why I asked, because I wanted to find out, I wanted to follow up on that. That's why I wanted to understand it clearly. Before, NEXA used to have an enrichment. Was it not a reprocessing when it had an enrichment plant? What was it?
NEXA never had a reprocessing.
It was just an enrichment.
Enrichment.
Okay. Never had. Okay. That's why I wanted you to clarify on that. Okay. Right. And I'll allow the member to.
No, just one question that was not responded to, the funding model. That's the one section of the talk. But the additional one, I think it must be understood that probably we sometimes don't get well prepared as members when we come to discuss this issue. We don't take a position to say we're going to go there and argue against the presentation itself. But some of the questions are just spontaneous. And some of the questions you'll find that it will be exposing us to say since this person is ignorant. I want you to bear with us as a department. But it also says that when you come with the presentation, you need to open up, probably even quoting from the relevant legislation and policy that you've got, which will make things more easier for us. You know, if you are to implement the policy as part of your performance agreement that you will deal with these issues, then although when you get to us, we'll start questioning some of the. But if you could bear with us or not. But the last one that I wanted to check is how was your engagement with interested parties? You know, it touches on other entities. How did it go? Is everybody happy? We wouldn't like to find when there's a public hearing. You'll start finding departments being as. The one that is also coming in and complaining and so on, who would like to see a united front from the department showing that you've taken all the concerns on board. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. There are some issues. I want to go back so to clarify these issues before the committee members. You have quoted some students that have been trained. In fact, as I once discussed with you, that's another problem because some of the people that you've mentioned have, are the ones who have written letters that have not been isolated here as a result. They have had to go overseas, to work back overseas. So they are not here, some of them. And so this is the problem that how are we going to then deal with these problems? We say we are running short of skills. Even when people are trained, they come back here, we don't give them proper jobs until they leave. And one of some of the people that you've mentioned, I know them. They have written, these are matters that we still have to discuss with the committee. What do we do when we have people that we have trained and they are not being given opportunities until they leave the country again? It's very good that they have raised that point, because these are all the points that we have, and the members must know that. See, you are talking about, what do they call it, abstract skills. The skills that, because we do have skills in our kind of reality, but it's just that they are abstract. They are there, but non-existent. I don't know how to call it. So that is exactly the type of the problem that I am saying. Are we not causing a problem? Because first we have that challenge where we have skills that have had to migrate, and of course we don't use them, and we have to recruit them on very reasonable cost to bring them back with confidence. Because in their experience, they have never been treated well. So I wouldn't leave South Africa and go and work for British Nuclear Fuels or International Atomic Energy Agency. And then by creating this agency, and then you recruit me, and then I just live there and come here. Because I would think twice, how far and how long will this agency exist? Is he going to be able to do what I'm already doing there? You see, and you understand what I'm talking about. Right. So that is therefore not a reasonable response to me, and probably these are all matters that need to be dealt with. But you have dealt with most of you. Yeah, you have dealt with matters that pertain to that according to the Act, according to the White Paper. But actually, last week, if you listen to the debate that we had on energy, on National Energy Bill, we were agreed. But even the development of that bill is based on the premise that the White Paper is 10 years old and it needs to be reviewed. The minister admitted it in public, in a platform. That's a public platform. So some of these areas that you're talking about, they will need to be reviewed in order that they accommodate what we think should be done in the new way, in a novel way. You see, so I do not want, therefore, that we always give a threat to members that, by the way, remember, this is in the Act, because I checked it, or this is in the White Paper, because these are all the things according to this new national energy bill, which we have to change in order to comply with our new thing as to how to do things better than before, so that we don't fall into power outages that we're right now. I think that we have to get those things there. And you must remember that White Papers or all these nuclear energy acts, they are actually our brain children. They belong here to this committee. There's nothing you can talk about outside this committee. We are the committee that can change them should we see that there is a need, therefore, to amend now this thing, because they are obstructing the progress that the committee thinks would better suit the country. So I think we must be clear about that. And then you said, and then you talked about, and we still argue about the response you gave about Potchefstroom University having now this. It's a new one, and it's not fully fledged. I know, because they also approached me. I know it very well where they are, and it's a very new thing. It has got a lot of things that are still not there in terms of the real nuclear engineering capabilities. Now, but just to add on that, you see, to produce a citizen, a person who will be in the agency, an efficient agency, as you predict, as you wish, he must have, you know, you must calculate the years. He must have a minimum of 22 years training. 22. You know why? Because if you start from class 1 to grade 12, from grade 12 to honors to masters, to PhD, to 5-year training after PhD to become a citizen scientist who is able to really do what you want him to do in the ages, it takes a minimum of 22 years. Minimum. That is when you produce then the person that you are foreseeing in there. So, where will in that 22 years, I suppose we establish this and this agency next year, calculate 22 years to have those people. Okay, half it by 10 to get probably those that have started their degrees now, as you are saying.
It's still a nightmare. It's not a solution. You see? So you must get it from that perspective there. I'm talking from that perspective myself. So you need, if you look in the world, if you look in the, you go to the US, you go to Japan, to China, you see the flood of the people. They started flooding them. Actually, when I was in the Science and Technology Forum of Japan, they said that the Japanese said that for what they are now, it began in 1960. But those are the guys now who are the chairs of the Science Council of Japan, who were sent as early as 1960 to get trained in the U.S. to bring Japan to where it is now. So it's not a child's play. It's a nightmare. You need a proper planning when you talk about this. And agents, especially of this nuclear, has haunted the world, especially nuclear waste management. So it can't be a very easy solution for South Africa. We have to think about it. That's why I say we need a workshop where we come with facts and then figure. And then we know what we're doing. And the energy, this national energy bill is exactly about that. Modeling, data modeling, basing things on scientific data rather than speculation. And that is where we are. Yeah, I think I've made my point. It's not a comment rather than a question, but if you need to feedback, it's fine.
The person that Ms. Komura deal with the funding model issue. I think we will perhaps have to look at how we prepare the presentation in terms of making sure that we avail or to link things with the Act and so on. And we will endeavor to do that. I think the issue of skills, again, I think there is a need to say that I think the challenge here is that we don't deploy people properly. But there are skills, I would like to admit, but they just don't get deployed. And I think Chaperson, on the lighter note, from allowed the 22 years, I think in the room, without mentioning a name, there is a young man sitting at the back, Chaperson, who is a doctor who has that 22 years, who is a specialist in radioactive waste management. And I'm not promoting him or anything, but there are such examples. And he is a well-known young man throughout the world on this topic. Yeah, as I said, the funding model, and I, again, the workshop we would welcome on this. And how we take it. But our view, I think, as a chief directorate in the department, is really that we've got to start somewhere. And that's where we started. A few years ago, we did not have the number of PhDs. They were probably not more than, you know, three or four. But, I mean, at some point we had 11 in the pipeline, at PhD level, and that number has reduced to 8, because others have made it. There are others that I may not know about who have opted to remain abroad. But there is something being happening. It may not be enough. One other fact that is not known generally is that the nuclear engineering program of ESCOM for PWR of Westinghouse origin is the only program that is accredited outside the United States. And that's a fact that is not regularly, that's not known. That once you have that under your belt, you basically can work in any PWR without being questioned. And these are some of the facts that just that maybe when those people complete, we then don't deploy them in the right places. But they are such, because then for it to be accredited, it means it has a particular standard.
No, I can tell you why it is accredited. I know that's the fact about it. But you can continue to discuss that later.
As I say, then the last issue would be then the funding model, and I think Homo would deal with it. But perhaps before I just to say that we brought this legislation, a piece of legislation, also, as I indicated, we didn't think we have all the answers. It's a bill. It's for the committee to also guide us as to know, go this route, go that route. We don't think that we came quite clearly knowing that that would be the case. And in terms of consultation, all government departments signed off on the bill. So the government department signed off. NEXA, NNR, who are state-owned, were consulted. And it was our understanding that then there would be public hearings on the bill, which would then deal with the issue of concerns and input from members of the public. But also we do have interaction that we've engaged in with the NEDLAC on the process of the bill. So I think in terms of consultation, that is, I'm not sure if I've left anything, but that's as far as we've gone so far.
Thank you so much for that. On the question of the funding model and whether the parliamentary appropriation, i.e. taxpayer money, will be used to fund basically commercial things, the provision on the money appropriated by Parliament was actually added to the bill to address the issues of where will the money come from once the agency is established and the fund bill has not yet been approved, meaning that the funds does not exist yet. The bulk of the money of the agency will actually be the money that is paid by the generators of radioactive waste in keeping with the polluter pays principle. In keeping with the polluter pays principle, that they will contribute into the fund, and basically the agency will be running on these monies. So the parliamentary appropriations are not going to be into perpetuity. So the agency will get money then from the fund once it is established, and it will be from the services rendered to the generators of radioactive waste, and also then loans that they would raise together with any donations or contributions to give the upkeep bulk of the minister from any source, but the bulk of their money will actually come from the fund. The provision for parliamentary appropriation was added to address the issues of once the agency is established and the fund has not yet been established, therefore you don't have money as yet in the fund, how is the agency going to be able?
Are you done? Okay. That's an example, but I collected. We still have about 60 minutes.
No, just a follow-up, Professor. You know, one day it may not be us. Maybe some other people will be sitting here who will be appropriating those funds, who may easily say, in terms of this legislation, Parliament has got to do that. Even if when it would be viable enough to continue with its work, and its work misuse of money, or sometimes money is accumulated more especially because they would be allowed to keep the surplus. Now my mind was to say that it needs to be crafted in such a way that it stays on establishment. Probably could be phased out at a later stage, it would have to be monitored. But somehow it should be crafted in such a way that it doesn't give an impression that it will just be a for good thing, that there should be an appropriation each year, although there will be profits on that.
Yeah. I think in response to that and in collaboration with what the department chief Dunnett has just raised a question of that they are here, they understood that the it's a process we still need to go through public hearings and that's why I've circulated that paper to show that no, this is not final. You must not think that the committee has decided what we're saying is an interaction which is part of the process. You see, the parliamentary process starts where we are with you and it goes to public hearings and back after public hearings we're calling back again and engaging the process. So some of the stories that we're discussing now may also change dramatically after the public hearings when other stakeholders come with very valid contributions and inputs. So they may decide that exactly as you are saying, and you may feel that probably with facts that they present, that they are correct to establish the agency, the agency, as you say, they may simply say that with facts again, that this is useless because of this and that and that. And then we as Parliament say, oh, then we didn't have these facts now. New facts have emerged and so forth. So we are on that process. The process is always like that. It's constitutional. We can't need to change. And so we will follow that process. We will have the public hearings, I think, on the second, next Tuesday. We will have the same public hearings. And you will be here to hear for yourself what they will say, whoever comes. But at the end of the day, because Parliament, we as Parliament are the custodians of public interest, we have to see what is in the public interest, not in the stakeholders' interest. But we have to take the view of the stakeholders when we look at all pieces of legislation. So that is the process, and we will follow it. So don't be scared that things have fallen apart by questions that members want to know rigorously. What exactly is the agency going to do? Why is it not doing things that way? Why these people have been excluded as part of the parliamentary process? Don't think that there's anybody with any special negative attitude towards your directorate or so forth. Just want to establish facts before we put, because the legislation is something that remains for many years. And if we have made a mistake, they say, You can't have made such a mistake. It means you didn't go through a rigorous process that is anticipated by the Constitution. That's where we are. Okay, so what I'm saying, therefore, I am answering the number also. The number is saying that you see, all those kinds of things, when we meet with other stakeholders in a platform of public hearing, we will probably get more facts and mix together
inside the energy field. Do you know how many pages that were taken out? About more than 30 pages of what they had brought. They were taken out. Because when the stakeholders made input, when Parliament made input, most of the things that were there had to be discarded. And so that's how it happened. And so you must also expect that it will also happen with you, because that is how it should work, when it should work for many centuries, if at all. So, maybe that you can respond and say, any response from what the member asked.
So, thanks, Chairperson. I think the Chairperson has really put us at ease. I was beginning to be concerned greatly. On the issue of the crafting, we do concede that perhaps that section is not crafted clearly enough, and that we will make a note of that and meet one of the amendments. The interaction, but quite clearly, Chairperson, there is a need for this workshop or workshop on various topics. We really appreciate this. We think, as I said, there is a view of trivializing nuclear, and we don't subscribe to that view.
You know, you have to respond. You know, this process actually is designed to help you. It's like you can call it a rehearsal process, because that's why we first interact with you as a committee alone. And then we bombard you with questions that you should expect during the time of the public hearing. And we also give you, again, what you call a time for recuperation. Then you look into that, and then you come back to us again. After you have had those, whatever, it may be a very brainstorming session from the stakeholders, mind you, they are very diverse. And they may not come as friendly as we are friendly to you, because you are our department. So we always come here in a friendly way. This is a friendly way, because what we say is not what we are going to do. We are warning you what may happen in the public hearings and in the future of from public who some of them have nothing to do with it. But we because we are the parliament, we have formed this government, so we have to make the government can't create a government which at the end also we as parliament have a point of no confidence in. So we have to come and tell you how we have done things, and then you say no. We don't want the public to say they have no confidence in you, because they have no confidence also in us as parliament. So that's why we create some things here, so that you go and rehearse yourself and see where you have taken things for granted, or where you have rushed things when you have not thought about them. And then you come back in a public process where now they are ruthless, probably, as stakeholders. You see, and then are able to know now that the case will have to be rehearsed, and the committee has given you that this was going to happen. And then you go again and look into what the public, the stakeholders have done elsewhere. And then you come back again to us, where again we face some issues as we have understood them as a committee. So this is a parliamentary process. Doesn't end here, it goes further. Even what we have done, we take it to the NCOP, and the NCOP also does exactly the same thing. And then once every oil also has been finished, then it goes to the president before us. So that's how it goes. So don't panic. feel free, but know that the process is required. I think we have, at this juncture, I think we can attend the meeting until next Tuesday, when we're meeting the public with the second of the but thank you very much for all of you who have come, members of Parliament, of my committee in particular. Thank you very much for supporting this process. And all of the people who have come here, including the journalists, do not report things that they didn't say. Thank you very much.